Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. High Velocity Radio is brought to you by PSI Digital Media Experts, the market leader in delivering digital media services. From manufacturing millions of CDs and DVDs to turnkey e-commerce solutions and streaming high-definition video over their worldwide content distribution network, PSI has the solutions to meet your needs. Find PSI at psidiscs.com, psidiscs.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from Radio X Studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Stone Payton.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and joining me in the studio is our producer, Lee Cantor, and my buddy, Todd Schnick. What's happening, Todd?
Not much, Stone. How are you this morning?
I am doing well. I'm a little bit tired. I went to Talladega yesterday.
Yeah, a little high velocity. How'd it go?
It was very high velocity. I don't know if some of our listeners might have seen the end of that race, but it was pretty exciting.
Well, I hear the race was boring for the first 90% of it, and then it got interesting at the end, which is typical for Talladega.
Yeah, it is, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, people were coming across the finish line, scraping metal and everything else.
So were you wearing your high velocity golf shirt?
Oh, absolutely.
Did people think you were on the NASCAR radio network?
Oh, yeah. They thought I was the real deal.
Did you con any drivers in interviews?
No, but we are. Next time we're getting press passes.
And, outstanding.
Yeah, we'll be all over it. What'd you do while I was at Talladega?
You know, I was taking it easy. I've been sick, and so I'm finally feeling better. Got some work done, actually. Took care of some client work, which I hadn't done in a while, so it was nice.
Yeah.
I'm sure they appreciate it, too.
So what are we doing after the show this week? Are we doing more author interviews this week?
We got some more author interviews this week, and we're also getting ready to hit the road again, hitting Charlotte next week.
Yeah, booking Charlotte now,
we're
right?
Booking Charlotte now. Looking forward to that.
Okay. Well, enough of that. We better get started with what we got going on this morning. Who do we have up first?
Well, our first guest is a dear friend of mine. He and I have spoken together at a recent conference. He is the legitimate and true entrepreneur in the true sense of the word. He is a consultant in wealth management. He has been published in many trade journals. He's a speaker. He's the founder of Insurance Georgia. And what I admire most about him is that he's a true competitor in triathlon. So welcome to the show, Andrew Windham.
Thanks, Todd. Great to be here with you and Stone.
It's good to have you. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm 33 years old, and probably the greatest accomplishment I have is I'm the father of three boys, 8, 6, and 5, and happily married to my wife, Carrie, who I met at Auburn University while I was there running. Interesting story behind that. You know, they say opposites attract. I don't think I ran competitively at Auburn. If I hadn't gotten hurt and had foot surgery and ended my running career, I probably never would have met my wife. We ran in closed circles, but not circles that obviously intertwined until that occurred. So we actually met at a basketball game, and the rest is history, as they say.
That's great. That's great. I love those kinds of stories. You know, so tell us a little bit about your background. Listed some of the things you're involved in now, but tell us about your career background.
Well, I guess I started or the foundation was laid for my current profession or one of those major advantages that allows us to differentiate ourselves from an early age. Grew up as the son of a father who was a general surgeon in North Alabama, just north of Birmingham, general surgeon. First job, I guess, was about $1 an hour filing charts. I knew my ABCs and So some interesting things behind that, but due to time, we'll cut that short. But graduated from Coleman High School and went to run track at Auburn University, where I was blessed to have an opportunity to do quite well there. Was an All-American there, served in a leadership capacity for the Southeastern Conference. Got to know Damon Evans, now the AD over at Georgia, so looking to call in a favor there here in the near future on the Sports Talk Radio show we've got going. But from there, went to work at IBM and knew at some point I would probably own my own business. Didn't expect for it to come at the young age of 22. And so when I left IBM, went to a biomed startup six months later after doing about 400% of year-over-year quota, got laid off, and that basically was the beginning. They say as some doors are closed, many are opened. Was looking at some healthcare and made a healthcare purchase for my family at the time. In about 6 months after that fact, my son, on a Sunday after church, had an anaphylactic reaction to peanut butter, a PB&J. And I got to take him to the hospital, and shortly thereafter, I was blessed with a $6,000 bill. And I say blessed because I have because I've worked in and around medicine. I was looking at potentially going to med school, and made a decision to do otherwise. I've seen a lot of aspects of the healthcare system right now, and so
just how impressed are you?
Well, I'm not impressed with the folks who are legislating it right now. I can tell you that. The only thing that they're good at doing right now is wasting a lot of time and paper. But you know, there are some things that need to be fixed in that, and I look forward to, you know, helping hopefully shape that, and some stuff that we've done with the National Association of Health Underwriters as a consultant, and also with a new radio show we'll talk about in a little bit. But you know, long story short, at a $6,000 bill, I can tell you, based upon what I know about what's going on in the country right now and has been for years, $6,000 was really a drop in the bucket. And, you know, I think that, that normally our reaction is to blame it on somebody else, or it's somebody else's fault. And frankly, it was my fault, because it's my responsibility, as it is a consumer's responsibility, to know what it is that they're doing, why it is that they're doing it. And if the advisor that you're using does not support you in that process, then it's your responsibility to interview and to find a more appropriate advisor. I quite often run into business owners that I work with, and we ask them, you know, how did you get a CPA or financial planner? Well, their buddy advised them to go get this individual, and they haven't asked questions about, you know, is the financial advisor capable of managing their own personal finances prior to giving them their own. So that was basically the foundation of how I got into the insurance business. It wasn't because when I was five back in my father's office making a buck an hour filing charts, I said, when I grow up, I don't want to file charts. I want to be an insurance guy. But that laid the foundation of Insurance Georgia for us, Todd, and we've been very blessed the last 8.5, 9 years. We've grown, and now in basically, about 10 years, we've grown a pretty successful practice.
That's great. You know, we had a guest on last week's show who is also in the medical field, and she was saying that 80 to 90% of all medical bills have some error on it. It's just staggering to me that this kind of stuff is out there happening. You know, I don't want to spend this show talking about politics, but if you don't mind, give me your quick read on the status of this healthcare reform.
Well, you know, the common question I get on a regular basis is what's going to get passed? And, I think most of the folks that know me well is the one thing they can say is what you see is what you get here. There's nothing but just who I am. And so, you know, what I would tell you is frankly, I don't have a clue. And anybody who tells you that they do, I think that they're severely misleading you. Now, what I do believe is, I believe whatever our politicians feel like they can sneak through and line their pockets in the process is what will go through. And that sounds like a very pessimistic viewpoint. But what I can tell you is, from 8.5 to 9 years in the business, and being, you know, more than very successful, like probably in the top 1 or 2%. And I don't say that to impress anybody. I say that because I have the luxury. I've helped build healthcare products. I've sold them. I've been in an OR. I know how stuff gets built from working in a doctor's office and being around my dad growing up. The people who are making these decisions have no clue what affects and what impacts the cost of healthcare. I mean, we started out this healthcare route, Todd, where basically the goal was, quote, to make sure folks who didn't have insurance all were insured and control medical cost. And all of the bills that have been presented to the CBO in some shape, form, or fashion have basically been presented in such a way that they'll reduce the deficit. But notice none of them say anything about reducing the cost of healthcare. And the most recent coming, primarily pushed by the Democrats out of the Senate Finance Committee that came out, actually the CBO stated that there would still be over 25 million people who would still be without insurance. So, you know, as an entrepreneur and a small business owner, where our success rides on setting clear, functional, realistic goals, sometimes slightly unrealistic, that are stretched for us, and then actually having to work within a budget and be profitable, okay? Clearly, we failed to do that on a governmental level, and not just once, but numerous times. And what's interesting to me is how often everybody now is getting caught up between the Democrats versus the Republicans piece. It's really simple for me. I don't really care whether they're male, female, black, white, alien, Republican, Democrat. I want somebody up there that who is willing to have some integrity and not try to figure out how they can BS us for about 1,900 pages, which is the average number of pages in these bills. So, you know, a long answer to a short question, but at the end of the day, the best thing that we can do as individuals is get involved and to do whatever we can to make sure the folks who are making these decisions are actually responsible for the decisions they're making, not that they can get by without reading them and we continue to send them up there. Because the reason that we have the quagmire right now and the health care bill didn't go sailing through like our current president and administration wanted it to is very simple. It's that politicians' number one goal is, once they get elected, is to stay elected. And a lot of the Democrats who would like to support and push something through are not, because they're simply afraid they won't get reelected. And so by using that, if we're willing to hold people accountable, the power in a consumer and in us as individuals is to hold those folks accountable and say, look, if you're not going to do the right thing, you're not going to read the bill, then there's no way you could be possibly supporting our best interest, and we're not going to put you back up there. And that's when you get people's attention. And the same is really true, in my opinion, for the healthcare market. 5 years ago, most health insurance companies were not providing wellness health care in the plans. One company puts a plan out, consumers start to purchase that plan significantly more than the rest, and now 4 or 5 years later, virtually every health care policy, whether it be an HSA consumer-driven plan or a more traditional copay-oriented plan, all have wellness included. In Georgia, while it does have probably too many mandates, there are some that I think are very helpful in the sense that every male, female, under the age of 5, all their wellness is covered at no expense out of the consumer's pocket other than their health care premium. And also mammograms, pap smears, prostate screening exams, all the things that are very key, I think, in preventing major catastrophic costs most of the time to consumers, those are covered. And that's an example of a consumer making positive impact on the marketplace, not a bunch of 1,900 pages of legislation that we can sneak other junk through.
Well, I wish you had some passion on the subject, but you need to relax, Andrew. They're only going to spend $1 trillion, so I wouldn't. Okay, so Insurance Georgia has been thriving for 8-9 years, but that's not all you're doing. So who are some other people that you're working with and serving?
Well, you know, the social media market, where I got involved in Twitter almost, it's been a little over a year now, about a year and a month, and worked with a lot of entrepreneurs, micro business owners. That's my market. Kind of like what you work with the guys over at Fuego Mundo. Great place, by the way.
Thank you.
And so because I work with entrepreneurs, micro business owners, that's how I'm wired. And so what I've always found is that when you're in any type of sales, you're in any type of business, it's best to work with folks that you're most closely connected with in terms of how you're wired. So you know how they think, you know why they think, and why they feel the way that they feel. And so as a result of that, that's the market that I worked in. And other folks that I've worked with a lot, his name's John Hollner, over in Powder Springs, close to where I live. He kept saying, man, are you getting on Twitter? Are you getting on Twitter? And I'm like, you know, I've got a million things going on, John. Quit bugging me trying to get me on something else. And so finally at a networking thing, which I do quite a bit of networking like yourself, he brings me a magazine and says, hey, look, I think you ought to read this. It was Entrepreneur Magazine, of course. And so I did a little research. It was actually the third time in under 12 months it had made the cover. And I kind of gave myself one of those virtual slaps and said, hey, you know, if it's important enough on a magazine that basically commands significant following and readership in the market that I work with, and I need to quit, you know, looking a gift horse in the mouth, if you will, and at least see what's going on. It came at a great time for me. Kind of got my feet wet, and like most folks, it was a challenging, hard-to-understand type of venue at first. And then the holidays rolled around, which gave me a little extra free time, and really plugged in, and within 3-4 months was making great headway, actually, through just simply trying to plug in and build a community and help folks out. I was writing 3 or 4 healthcare policies, helping people, not with the intention to write healthcare, but just because the information, the education, people were moving me into a position, you know, I guess as an expert. Which
I've been watching you on Twitter for a long time, and I've never seen you sell insurance on Twitter. You're doing it the way you're supposed to do it, which is communicating with people and caring and asking and serving. So I suspect some doors have opened for you because of your involvement in Twitter. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. You know, matter of fact, about it's been about 8 months ago the whole healthcare debate really started, right before or right as Obama entered, and that was one of his promises. The interesting thing about that was simply that if you're in the financial services, healthcare, and all that type of business, you know, one of the challenges or the concerns is that it has potentially a large economic impact on those folks. I mean, myself included, if we were to go to a completely government-run healthcare plan, there's reasonable likelihood that my job, at least as a traditional broker and helping folks purchase healthcare plans, would go away. And there are a lot of facets to that that are worth discussing, but all that long story short is that I was sitting actually at an Atlanta Health Association underwriters meeting. They were discussing, you know, healthcare and worried about how quick it was going to go through. And they were trying to figure out how they could combat it. And really without thinking, I kind of stood up and on the spur of the moment said, you guys better wake up and realize you're not going to have any type of influence in the marketplace in the world if you don't start doing it the way it's being done today. And immediately the gentleman who was running the meeting looked back at me and said, who the heck are you? And I said, you know, I responded, but basically in a nutshell, what I said was, look, President Obama and his administration were elected because their crafty and incredible use of social media and Twitter. They didn't raise the money they did by going out and getting, you know, oil companies and all those. They raised it $1, $5 at a time by connecting with people at their heart and making people feel like that they truly had an interest in change. Now, whether he's followed through on that promise, that's to be debated, but the reality is that there was a lesson in how that occurred. And so as a result of that, I said, look, it does not cost money to get involved in social media. The virality of social media, effective use of social media, blogging and all those things is a effective way for you not to try to compete with the millions of dollars that may be spent in terms of radio and television ads, but to actually get to the people who have the ability to influence that, which are the consumers.
I understand, speaking of different platforms, I understand that you're planning to leverage radio as well. Now, you got to know something. It's not as easy as Todd and I make it look, man.
It's not at all. As a matter of fact, you know, as a result of the I was actually hired as a result of that to put together a social media and a social media campaign for the Atlanta Association of Health Underwriters, and then was hired as a consultant to the National Association of Health Underwriters. And about 6-7 years ago, I looked at doing a radio show, Stone, and didn't have, outside of a little play-by-play experience in high school and just, you know, kind of fiddling around with it, didn't have a whole lot of experience. But, you know, with every marketplace, there are always opportunities there. And so basically is a triple-edged sword, if you will. There's clearly a danger that how my health, my profession does business and my ability to impact that market could change. And so for me not to have a plan B, C, or D would be foolish, one, in terms of responsibility for my family. But secondly, if the marketplace changes, I looked and I said, okay, if I'm getting organizations like the National Association of Health Underwriters, who I've been fortunate enough because, you know, I was blessed to pick up on the social media thing and use it effectively, there's still going to be a need for that information, that education. The key is I have to figure out how I can do that in such a way that it's at least economically prudent for my family in terms to put food on the table, not to, you know, to make $1 million like Rush Limbaugh, but to at least do it in such a way that I can leverage the knowledge and experience and help the consumers. And I've always believed that if you help enough people get what they want, then you'll be taken care of in the process. And so that really laid the foundation, the groundwork. I said, well, you know, look, I'm really having a good time with speaking. I'm getting opportunities through social media to have some unprecedented focus from other places that I may not have had. How can I leverage that so if the marketplace does or does not shift, that I can still leverage what I enjoy most, which is helping people make educated, informed decisions by participating and really just making insurance simple, because in my opinion, it's really not difficult. We're led by people to want to think it's difficult, but it's not, as long as A, you have somebody who knows what's happening with it in the first place, and B, you're willing to participate in the dialogue and the conversation.
So your new show is called The Benefactor. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, The Benefactor, the basic premise and the purpose behind The Benefactor is to basically fill a void in what I feel like in the radio and the television segment of our country, in between the Dave Ramseys of the world who are talking, you know, basic financial responsibility, you know, make sure that you're not spending more than you make, and the Clark Howards who are trying to tell you, you know, here's how you can save money. There's a place for both, but the challenge is that neither one of those individuals are really focused on what the foundation of any good, solid wealth platform is. And building wealth and financial responsibility and stability is about managing risk for starters. It doesn't matter if you have a financial planner who can get you 50% return on your money at $1,000 a month that you set aside. You end up with a $500,000 bill on your health care, then all that money's coming right back out from where it went in, and it's going to be covering that cost. And so The Benefactor's focus will be very simple. It's just educating consumers, because we believe an informed, educated consumer who feels like they no longer have to be apathetic, and there is value in participating in the dialogue and the discussion of their own financial responsibility and their risk, now completely gives the consumer the ability to have incredible impact in the marketplace and to make positive changes that are lasting and transformational for everybody. So we'll start with things as simple as educating people on how to choose a good healthcare policy, how to lower the total cost of ownership, because if you're purchasing your healthcare, you're paying for it all anyway. So the goal should be not to figure out how you can drive the premium down to $5 or how you spend $500 and have everything covered. It's just like anything else. When you purchase something, you want to spend the least amount of money possible but still maximize the benefit. The key is when you're mitigating risk, though, you don't want to leave holes for risk while you're being cheap on what you're spending. So we'll do that. We'll do it with auto insurance, homeowners. Our goal is to basically bring in experts who can talk to the variants of products that are available, because our philosophy at Insurance Georgia and Tough Advisory Group has always been to be on the consumer side, but we have basically a delicate mix there that we have to meet, Todd, because if we help the consumer in such a way that it's not healthy for the insurance company who's willing to help goes away. If we just look out for the insurance company, then the consumer's not taken care of and they're unhappy, and so what happens to them? They go away as well. So it's that delicate balance, and what we want to do is, regardless of what happens in the market, we want a more educated, informed consumer who's willing to participate, because they believe that there is hope, that the time that they're spending, the energy they're spending, and in their business and all of those things can be fruitful long-term financially for them.
That sounds great. It's going to be a great service to the community. Congrats to you. We're about out of time with your segment. How can people find you, connect with you, and how will they be able to listen to that show?
The Benefactor, we're still in the works. We're in final negotiations with basically two radio stations, WGKA and WGST. And it will probably be on a Saturday or a Sunday morning. Potentially it will be on a Saturday morning and then rebroadcast on a Sunday. So the details of that are still kind of up in the air. We're looking to launch that in early to mid-January. They'll be able to find us we've already reserved the URL. It's thebenefactorshow.com. We looked at The Benefactor, but a famous guy that owns the Dallas Mavericks happens to own thebenefactor.com. So thebenefactorshow.com is where we'll be, and they can also find me at insurancegeorgia.com. Or reach out to me on Twitter. I keep it simple for people like me who need simplicity. It's just Andrew Windham, and you can search and find me there as well.
Outstanding. All right, one last agenda item. We have a tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show where we ask our guests to share a mistake they have made in their career, and more importantly, what they have learned for it. Can you do that for us?
Yeah, that's actually pretty simple. I've made the same mistake. I like not to make the same mistake over and over again, but I think in business, if you do business with people you know, like, and trust, which is whom I aim to do business with, it's sometimes we let our guard down and we fail to follow some basic principles. And one of those is, you know, you need to plan your divorce before you plan to get married, because unlike a marriage that typically there's a significantly different level of commitment in business, relationships come and go. And so the lesson that I've learned is that always map out in terms of a contract, even though it feels uncomfortable at the time when you're doing it, and it feels so good just to go ahead and jump right in. It's better to really lay out the terms that everybody can go their separate ways, because it prevents people from having permanently harmed and damaged feelings down the road. And just as importantly, it protects you from being damaged, you know, financially and emotionally in terms of friendships. And, you know, a year ago I had a partner I've known for 7 years went another direction. And I wish that we'd had a contract that would have made that a lot more palatable to handle. So that's the lesson.
That's great advice. Stone, you and I need to work out our
I get everything.
Agreements,
and
right?
And an alimony check.
Yep, right, I got you. Andrew, it was a great pleasure. There's a lot of stuff about you we didn't get a chance to talk about. We'll get you back on and talk more about that. Thanks for being with us. Stone, tell
Thanks
us about
me.
Our next guest.
Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show is Intellectual Capital Consulting partner and co-founder Kathy Martin. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Good morning.
Well, tell us a little bit about your business and what you're out there doing for folks.
Our business is a management consulting firm, and we help companies get more profitability through their employees or their human capital.
Well, that sounds like a pretty tall order. Exactly how does that work?
It is a very tall order. So typically what we do is we look at the desired business results, whether it's revenue, increased profitability, and we back up and look at five key areas within the business. We look at leadership, strategy, the culture. We look at how employees are delivering to the customer. So that we look at those five key areas.
So when and where does a business try to reach out to you, or do you go find them and sort of convince them they ought to be working with you?
Well, two different ways. You know, they'll come to us, and usually over the last 5 years, it's been a business that's in the small to medium size realm, $65 million and above, and they're stuck. They want to take their business to the next level, and they just can't get there because one of those five areas is just not working for them. They don't have a clear strategy. Their employees are disengaged with the business. Their culture is hindering them from moving forward. So one of those, they'll have a pain point, and they'll call us and ask us to help them fix that. Or, you know, they search us out on the internet, Twitter, like Andrew mentioned, blogs, so forth and so on.
Well, but you're not the only show in town. What is it that makes you guys different, you think?
We certainly are not the only show. It's, especially now with the recession, because everybody is a consultant. So absolutely. So I think what makes us different, and for 13 years, we've really tried to customize our methodology, our products, our solutions to that company. And so we really work hard on not just delivering some off-the-shelf, usual solution. We really try hard to customize it to what's going on with that company.
Well, I certainly understand the need for and the attraction toward a customized solution, but I have to believe, certainly as you go in and work with more and more of these companies, that you see some patterns, some themes, some pathologies that are consistent across a lot of these companies. Has that been your experience?
Absolutely. I mean, over the last 5 years, especially dealing in that market we talked about earlier, the $65 million and above, they get in, they're entrepreneurs, they're family-oriented, and they just get stuck because they can't see the forest for the trees, and they don't have the right metrics, or they don't have a strategy, and they just can't figure out how to get over the hump. So that's been, you know, that's been a common theme.
You know, I've been following your thought leadership for a little while now, since we knew we were going to have an opportunity to have you on the show, and I know Todd has as well. And I've noticed particularly recently you've had quite a bit to say about this whole area of change management, and you had some things to say that I think maybe were a little bit counterintuitive and a little bit refreshing. Do you mind sharing some of that with us?
Yeah, I recently I created a blog on the subject, and the reason was we were dealing with a major corporation in town, and they called us and said, we need some change management. And, of course, I had to ask 75 more questions about why do you need change management. And when I got down to the end of peeling back the onion, it was really that they were stuck at strategy execution. So that got me to thinking, are we talking about change management? Or are we talking about executing strategy? Or is that a combined? Because we have so many OD consultants or HR consultants or management consultants that do those things separately. And I really feel that those things should be done together. So I did get a lot of pushback for that.
Well, I want to shift gears on you for just a moment because you mentioned utilizing the blog to get some of your thought leadership out. And that's certainly been a great place for us to start to learn more about you. Has that been effective for you, this whole social media thing?
Absolutely. And like Andrew, I went in kind of kicking and screaming, you know, with everybody prodding me to say, you need to get in, you need to get in. And I couldn't see the value at first. And we've been in over a year. And what I've seen in our business is, just like Andrew said, it sets us up as a subject matter expert. And we do a lot of speaking, probably, I don't know, 12 to 15 major speaking engagements a year. And I would say that because of the blog and through Twitter, we have connected to other speaking opportunities on a more national level. So absolutely, I'm a believer.
Well, you know, I've spent some time in some boutique consulting firms. I've been hired and fired myself from some of the most respected boutique firms on the planet. But I mostly carried out a sales and marketing role. Mm-hmm. And I always wondered what the folks on the ground did, the consultants. Now, I wonder if you could walk us through a little bit. You know, what does that look like? Maybe just paint us a picture of a typical engagement and what kinds of things go on when you're actually in there working with a client.
Well, just recently we worked for a manufacturer in southern Alabama. And the issue was they were probably about almost $100 million, and they were ready to take their business to the next level. They wanted to grow. They had very, very huge growth plans, stretch goals. And so we went in and we started asking them questions about, you know, what is your strategy and how do your employees embrace that? Well, they didn't have one. And so our first line of defense is to go in and understand what the employees are thinking and how they feel about the company and their jobs. And more importantly, what are the customers feeling? Because that relationship, because we all know intuitively that happy employees equal happy customers. So if that link gets broken, we need to figure out what's going on there. So our first line of defense is going to do research via surveys, focus groups, or whatever it is, conversations, interviews. And so what we found out is the customers were saying, look, we do more business with you if your ship times were shorter, or we do more business with you if your terms were longer. And they didn't even know this. I mean, these were simple, easy fixes. You know, so we were able to recommend that. Then we go in and look at the culture. What is preventing these employees from delivering excellence? And it, you know, it's a family-owned business. There was a lot of politics involved. So kind of trying to wade through that and making the true north the strategy and making sure every employee in that organization understood it, could articulate it, and knew what their role, how their role impacted that strategy.
How do you go about making a good decision when it comes to engaging a consultant? I mean, because that's not something that these $65 million businesses do every day, right?
No.
I mean, what do you look for? What kind of questions do you ask? What do you try to avoid?
Well, in our, I can just tell you from our side, when, you know, when they are interviewing us, I think what really speaks to these smaller companies is your credibility. And so they look at that from the person, obviously from our backgrounds in our company, but they also talk to our customers. So we've been very blessed to have several customers in our client base that are willing to give us testimonials. So they look first to that.
And then you can tell them we've been on the High Velocity Radio Show.
So. Absolutely. And yeah. I'm going to do that later this afternoon.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, you're in the big time.
Yeah, slam dunk now.
Yeah, the phone's probably ringing right now.
You touched on an important idea a few minutes ago about the disconnect with the customer.
Right.
And you're working with some pretty large organizations, 65 million, 100, you mentioned 100 million. Are your customers realizing that they can get more hardwired into the customer by engaging on tools like social media and dialoguing and conversing with them that way?
You know, yes and no. Some of our bigger clients, Intercontinental Hotels, Genuine Parts, Southern Company, certainly some of those guys are. Our smaller firms, the $65 million to $100 million, are just now, like us, just now getting around to that. So, yes, they are starting to use social media to figure out what are the customers saying about them and how to, you know, another distribution point for that customer. So starting.
So they're starting to see it.
Yes.
I saw a statistic last week that said 76% of small businesses, I'm not sure how that study was defined small business, did not believe social media was a benefit to them. So it's just amazing to me how many people still don't seem to understand that.
It is to me, too. I mean, they're starting to see it. And it's like, you know, groups of professionals. Like I was at an HR conference last week, and we asked some people to raise their hand for HR professionals who I think would really get the value of social media, because recruiting is a low-hanging fruit. And it was about that statistic. Maybe 20% raised their hand. I was astonished.
You've had quite a bit to say lately on your blog, anyway, about this idea of employee engagement as well. Share with us a little bit more about your take on that.
I mean, that to me, and I've got such a bias for that, that to me is where the rubber meets the road. Because if your employees are not engaged, they're not committed, and they're not giving you your best. Tons of statistics out there on that. So they're more profitable for you the more engaged they are. So then the natural question is, what makes them engaged?
And it's not just having movie night, is it?
It's not movie night. It's not it's not donuts. It's not ice cream days. You know, typically when we do employee engagement surveys, the data comes back, and the maker or breaker of the deal is the supervisor. So dissatisfaction is all around the supervisor, whether it's communication, whether it's the way they handle career development, the way they get their performance appraisal, their openness. Just that relationship is critical in that employee engagement arena.
So when you say supervisor, you're referring to that immediate boss, not so much the big cheese, right there.
Right there. Right there, because that's where the rubber meets the road, because that manager is in charge of the whole employee experience. And so they can make it or break it. So employees typically don't leave companies, they leave supervisors.
What an interesting notion. So in working with these organizations, surely you're already sort of postured to make that observation and probably offer some ideas to shore it up. Is training, leadership training, ever part of your deliverables? Is that the right word? Is that something that you try to bring?
You know, it just depends. We do a lot with supervisory training. Now, leadership training to me is a whole different ballgame, because leaders, the C-suite and the organization, they've got a big charge. You know, they've got to drive that strategy downward. And there's a lot of companies that we will refer to here in town to do some true leadership training, because we can't be everything for everybody. We certainly recognize it, and we do make appropriate referrals when necessary. And if it's at the supervisory level, we will do some of that. Yeah.
Well, it's a related question. It's one that's been preyed on my mind for some time, because I hear it reflected in one way or another in a lot of conversations with HR people inside large organizations. And it's often expressed as them not having an opportunity to sit at the big table. It's done in like Thanksgiving terms, you know, that they're at the kiddie table. What do you have to offer, if anything, strategies, ideas to help an HR person be taken for what they're worth and have an opportunity to sit at the strategic table?
How long do we have? I have such an opinion about this. So I think we need to stop talking about the table. You know, we've been talking about that table for 10 years as a profession, as HR professionals, and we actually need to do something to be able to be invited to that table. So what does an HR person need to do? Well, they need to understand the business and the business results, because until they do that, what value do they bring to the discussion? And if they're always talking about compliance and paychecks and picnics and all that other crap, how are they going to add value? Probably made some people mad. How are they going to add value to that discussion? You know? So they've really got to get in the business, understand the customers, understand competition, understand what drives employee engagement, so they will be better served at increasing revenue or profitability.
Well, I've probably already touched on it, but I'm going to ask this question anyway. What do you find the most fun about your work, and what, if anything, do you find a little bit frustrating from time to time?
Oh, gosh. I think the fun part is, you know, you go in and you're kind of like a detective and you're diagnosing what's going on in the business. And, you know, I talked about it earlier. They've trusted you. They've chosen you. They feel like you have credibility to be able to help them take that leap. And when they finally take that leap, you know, I could almost not get a paycheck, almost. but it's fun to watch them progress down that path. What's not so fun is recently with a client, you know, they've said they wanted to be customer focused, or they've said they wanted to be performance based and driven. And then you make all the recommendations and you give them all the tools and you give them all the deliverables, and they say, not so much. you know. So we were just kidding about that. We're just going to stay status quo. So that really hurts, you know.
Are employees in these large organizations, we talk about customer employee engagement, and you see all kinds of writings and material out there about the hatred of living in cubicle nation and all that. When an organization embraces what you're telling them about fostering and strengthening employee engagement, are those employees actually receptive to that? I mean, is that what they really want? I mean, are they responding to that?
I absolutely believe it, because I think employees – by nature, I'm an optimist. They want to do a good job. And so they want to be connected both with their heart and their mind. So when they get to work, I feel like, you know, they put their best foot forward. Most employees, we know that there's that 10% that are just there, you know, doing whatever. But yes, they want it, and they want to make a difference. They want to continuously grow and learn. They want to see the end result, the profitability and the increased revenue. So absolutely, I think they're starved for it.
Good.
Yep.
So what's next for ICC? You got anything new on the horizon, some upcoming events or anything that you're unveiling? What's happening in the near future for you guys?
Well, a couple things. We've got some speaking engagements through Sherman Atlanta, and I believe I'm going to be booked in March for the American Association of Healthcare Administrators to do a workshop on them. And our new product is Leading the Engaged Company. And so we're going to be unveiling that at the end of this year and the beginning of next. So it's our new model about looking at engagement all through the company. It's not just a program. It's part of the culture of the company.
Well, I hope you'll come back and share some information on that with us as you roll that out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're just about out of time, but there's a couple of things we want to make sure that we get accomplished, one of which is we want to make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you. What's the best way for them to contact you and learn more about you and your work?
You can follow me on Twitter, Kathy Martin, Kathy with a C. You can also go to our website, www.intellectual-capital.net.
Terrific. Well, and you heard us visit with our last guest. We're not going to let you off the hook just yet. We do have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We'd like to ask each of our guests, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Sure. I think one of the biggest mistakes is when my partner and I started our own business. And, you know, when you go into business, you want to obviously make money very quickly. And so we were everything to everybody. If they ask us, did you do a handbook? Sure. Can you do policies? Sure. Can you recruit? Absolutely. And it took us several years to really focus on what we were good at. And so if we'd have started that first, I often wonder how far we'd be down the road. So I learned to value what you're good at, stick with what you're good at, because it confuses the marketplace when you're always saying yes. And more recently, with the economy the way it is, it's very easy to go back to that, because the phone still rings and they're still asking those questions. But this time it was easier to say, no, you know, these are the things that we're good at. Yeah.
That's really good advice. It's an easy trap to fall into, isn't it, Todd?
It sure
is.
To
say yes to everything.
Yes,
yeah.
It does. Yes.
Especially when you're so talented. You know,
yes.
You have so much to offer.
Yes.
Well, what a marvelous show. I enjoyed that. We learned a lot here, don't we, man?
We sure do. Boy, it's another tough day at the office, Stone.
I guess we better clock out and go fishing, huh?
I guess so. It's probably that time.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton, Andrew Windham, Kathy Martin, my buddy Todd Schnick, our producer Lee Cantor, and everyone at the Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.